Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, but serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about our firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com or give us a call at 703-218-2100. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where there's all kinds of interesting articles, videos, and of course, audio on topics of interest in tax, estate planning, and business planning. And lastly, I invite you to read my column in the Washington Business Journal the first Friday of every month entitled Blueprint for Wealth. Today, we're going to talk about the top 10 legal mistakes entrepreneurs make. You know, I can tell you all kinds of war stories, but this article is based on an article that was published by the Harvard Business School and specifically by Associate Professor Connie Bagley that reflected on conversations she had with her former students who had actually gone out and started business ventures. And to prepare her current students for a business planning contest, she gave a seminar in which she shared war stories from these prospective entrepreneurs in the form of a list of top 10 legal mistakes that were made by the unsuspecting entrepreneurs. There's a tendency on the part of many entrepreneurs that the lawyers can handle all their legal issues, and they may often delegate too much to the lawyers. The language of the law can be intimidating, and concepts are usually quite straightforward. Lawyers tend to be risk-averse, so if you delegate everything to your lawyer, you're going to stay out of legal trouble, but you could compromise your business goals and objectives. So a good business lawyer is somebody who's going to tell you what the legal risks are, but then outline for you the business risks associated with your decision process. And you may make a business decision not to take the most legal averse route. So on the top 10 list, number 10, is failing to incorporate early enough. One problem that arises here is the so-called forgotten founder, a partner who was helping and starting up the venture and then subsequently drops out. Then when the venture gets financing or goes public or is about ready to be sold, the partner surfaces, perhaps with an inflated view of what his or her contribution was, and demanding an equity stake in the business. Now this, of course, can be eliminated by incorporating early and issuing shares to the founders with vesting requirements and often provisions in a shareholders agreement that says if you ever leave, the company or the remaining founders get to repurchase the shares. Incorporating early before significant value has been created and well in advance of any financing event that establishes a value for the shares also helps avoid potential tax problems for cheap stock that is given at the early stage. If you incorporate too late and issue inexpensive stock to the founders at that time, and more expensive stock is being sold to investors, you can have problems with the IRS later on. Number 9, issuing founder shares without vesting. I mentioned vesting. Vesting protects the members of the founding team who take the venture forward. If people remain on the team and are productive, their shares will vest. If they leave earlier, the stock can be retrieved and given to whoever is brought in to replace them. Number 8, hiring a lawyer who's not experienced in dealing with entrepreneurs and venture capitalists. Many venture capitalists and private equity investors say that often they rate the judgment of entrepreneurs by their choice of legal counsel. Lawyers who have no experience in working with entrepreneurs or venture capitalists will most likely focus on the wrong things, and they'll fail to recognize that some of the more subtle potential traps may be completely omitted in their planning. So hire somebody who's played the game, who knows what's standard and what isn't. Number 7, failing to make a timely Section 83B election. If you follow the advice above about issuing founder shares with vesting, then the shares will be issued subject to vesting to the founders as well as to new employees. If stock is acquired and it's subject to what the IRS calls a substantial risk of forfeiture, then the IRS doesn't view the purchase as being closed until that risk disappears. When the stock vests, the risk evaporates, so the IRS considers the deal closed. Then the IRS calculates the difference between the price paid for the stock and what the value is at the later date. An 83B election allows you to compute the tax based on the value at the time the shares are issued, not when they vest, which might be pennies per share, which reduces the overall income tax impact on the founders. Number 6, negotiate venture capital financing based solely on a valuation. You know, valuation is not the only thing you should consider when selecting a venture capitalist or negotiating a deal. There are many other ways for venture capitalists to be compensated if they end up paying a high price for the shares. These include requiring participating preferred stock with a high dividend, or redemption rights that are exercisable after only a few years, or having anti-dilution protection that ratchets with no cap. These terms may be terms of art to you and sound Greek to you, but they're critical in negotiating with a venture capitalist. You've got to ask, what's the reputation of the venture capitalist? Do they have a history of standing by the entrepreneur if the entrepreneur stumbles? Do they have good contacts in the industry? And do they know the big players? Number 5 mistake of the top 10 legal mistakes made by entrepreneurs is waiting to consider international intellectual property protection. Patents typically are granted on a country-by-country basis. In the U.S., if an invention is sold or made public, there's a year's grace period to file a patent application. But everywhere else, if the invention is sold or publicized prior to filing the patent, the invention is unpatentable in the country. For example, if the invention is disclosed to a Japanese national visiting a trade show in the U.S., then under Japanese patent law, if no patent application has been filed, the disclosure makes the invention unpatentable in Japan. The same goes for trademarks. So, it might cost a lot of money, but an intelligent choice would be to file for patent and trademark protection both internationally and in the U.S. if you want to protect your intellectual property. Number 4, disclosing inventions without having a non-disclosure agreement or before filing the patent application. If the patent protection has not been obtained, or in cases where a patent is not available, the only protection is to maintain something as a trade secret. So to do so, you have to show that you've taken reasonable steps to keep it secret from competitors. Is it wise to get potential venture capitalists to sign a non-disclosure agreement? In the best of all worlds, yes, but most won't do it. Before disclosing, one must learn who has a reputation for integrity. In dealing with most people, it's wise to require them to sign non-disclosure agreements. It doesn't have to be elaborate, but it should say that they acknowledge that they may be exposed to trade secrets and they agree not to use or disclose them without permission. Business plans should expressly state on the cover page that they're confidential and proprietary. Now, it may not be as strong as a non-disclosure agreement, but it's a start. Number 3, start your business while employed by a potential competitor or hiring employees without first checking their agreements with the current employer for knowledge and knowledge of trade secrets. Hey, the law is clear. If somebody is working for a company, particularly if he or she is a key employee, they cannot operate a competing business. Even incorporating may spark a lawsuit from the employer. Would-be entrepreneurs should go first to their current employer and either resign or tell them what they're doing and ask if they'd be interested in investing. Amazingly, it's a very smooth way of ending the relationship. Even after leaving the current employer, you still may not be able to use or disclose the employer's trade secrets. Under the so-called inevitable disclosure doctrine, if somebody's been exposed to trade secrets at their job and they leave to work for somebody else, and if their responsibilities in the new job are similar to what they were doing in the old job, some courts will conclude that it's inevitable that they'll use the information that they had from the earlier position. It also helps to know whether potential recruits are subject to covenants not to compete or non-hire covenants. The states vary from state to state in terms of what's enforceable or not. The bottom line is, check with a lawyer before going out and doing what you're thinking of doing. Number two on the list of the top 10 legal mistakes that most entrepreneurs make is promising more in the business plan than can be delivered and failing to comply with state and federal securities laws. If somebody promises to do something and knows that they cannot perform that promise, that is considered fraud. In a business plan, you have to make an honest appraisal of what's doable and set forth your assumptions so the person who puts up money and invests in your business can judge on whether or not those assumptions are realistic. Can entrepreneurs be sued by their funders for fraud? Absolutely. Yes. Trying to squeeze out a little extra valuation by fudging the numbers erodes credibility, or by overstating the assumptions, and it makes investors less trusting and ultimately impairs your ability to get subsequent rounds of funding. Finally, anybody selling stock or other securities has to comply with both federal and state securities laws, either by registering or meeting the requirements for an applicable exemption. And with the crowdfunding legislation that was recently passed, it may become easier to raise money in a startup context. The last mistake is thinking that any legal problems can be solved later. There's a tendency to think that once I get my funding, once I'm up and running, then I've got time to hire the lawyers and the money. Right now, I'm running as fast as I can to get my business plan done and raising money. This is short-sighted. Many of the points made here are problems that can't be patched up later. Does that mean you should devote all your time and effort and money to legal issues? No, but it's a good reason to hire a competent lawyer experienced in handling startups. If you've got questions about startups, give us a call at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.